Namaho Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutade Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Prachardane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Vasyachade Satarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare, Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vinata Samaditi Namane Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Vacharani Nirvishesha Samyavari Hasta Chade Satarane Hare Krishna. Before I begin speaking, I think I should give a little introduction as to why I'm speaking about this topic this evening. Ranamali Pandit is in Houston currently at a meeting of the North American leaders, and he sent me an email and he apologized, and I fully understood why he was not here for my visit. And I'm not sure when he returns. I think maybe it's Monday. Tomorrow morning. Oh, he'll be here tomorrow. Okay. Anyways, before I came, he gave me several topics and requested me to speak on them. And one of the topics was on the holy name of the Lord, so it just so happens that Our Srimad Bhagavatam classes are all on the story of Ajamil. So this morning, we got the opportunity to speak about some aspect of the glories of the holy name of the Lord. And tomorrow we will continue on that topic, but that was just coincidence or maybe Krishna's plan. I don't know what it was, but the topic for Srimad Bhagavatam was the holy name. So that was one of the topics he asked me to speak about. That, but that's being covered in our morning Srimad Bhagavatam classes. And he gave me several other topics and asked if I would speak on them. First, he asked if I would give seminars. He wanted to advertise them. And my schedule was such that I didn't want to plan any seminars. Usually seminars require consecutive classes. And therefore, I didn't have a schedule that would allow that for the consecutive classes to cover a topic. So I told him that on the weekend evenings, I would take one of the topics he asked me to speak on. But as I'm looking at the topics, there's several of them, I'm noticing that probably he's assuming that everyone is here is a member of the congregation because these are congregational topics. And because he's not here to ask him that question, maybe if you could help me with that.
Most of the people, not everyone.
Not everybody.
Most of the people are very
okay. Not everyone. So therefore, although they're congregational topics, then I should assume that some people rather are not part of the congregation, and I should try to present the topic in a way that's easily understandable and digestible for somebody who may not be so familiar. So that's good for me to know, because they're pretty much, for instance, oftentimes I get asked to speak on, several of the topics were developing relationships among devotees, cooperation, caring for devotees. These are three of the many topics that are there. They're congregational topics. I thought maybe I could probably, rather than speaking individually on them, I could probably combine them in a presentation and cover those topics. And I know, at least from based on my experience from traveling in many other places, it's a relevant topic, caring for devotees, relationships between devotees, cooperation. They're just like, it's a regular theme that I'm asked to speak about. Why? Well, probably because our leaders in our society observe that devotees need to be educated in these topics because many of them are not satisfied in their relationships. Some of them have difficulties in cooperating. Some of them need to feel cared for. And some of the leaders need to know how to care for them. And we can look at this from many different angles of vision. Therefore, I'm oftentimes requested to speak on these topics when I visit different temples. I was just in Australia, for instance, for the first time, just a few weeks ago. And the devotees said, "Maharaj, speak about devotee relationships, please." And it was like a desperate appeal. So I agreed to, and I spoke for 2 days on that topic there. And other places. I picked that place because it's the most recent presentation I gave on that topic. It was in Australia. And I don't want to make it sound as if our society doesn't have these. It does. Fortunately, there are many senior devotees who really have imbibed the spirit of cooperation. They've understood that the basis or foundation for cooperation has to be a spiritual platform, that cooperation requires a level of spiritual evolution which really necessitates somebody to look internally within themselves and think of themselves that also as possibly a contributor to not cooperating. And therefore they look within themselves also to see what they can possibly do to contribute to a more cooperative spirit amongst the society of devotees. Many of them are ideal examples of devotees who do know how to cooperate. And many of them are very caring. Caring for devotees, I guess the reason why I'm asked to speak a lot on that topic is because I've written a book, Taking Care of Krishna's Devotees. And as I oftentimes say, that oftentimes people seem to be very interested in the book. It's the most popular book I've ever published. And I would say probably because of the title. Maybe not so much of the the content. But the title's attractive. Sounds good. I didn't intend it that way. And just so that you know, the books are sold not for profit, so I didn't title it that for making a profit. In fact, the books are sold for cost, and many of them are even distributed without any cost. In fact, we printed up large numbers of them, and they were distributed freely at several of our festivals in Russia. They were distributed freely, and in attendance were like thousands of devotees. So. But it was given mostly to the leaders, and also to the leaders. It's given to all the leaders in Ukraine. I believe there are at least 500 to 1,000 copies that were distributed to the leaders in Ukraine. And but the title, Taking Care of Krishna's Devotees, is probably an attractive title because sometimes, as I've also observed in the course of my travels, devotees are, devotees oftentimes feel the need to be cared for. They complain, oh, temple authorities, all they want is me to do some service, but that's all they want, you know, it's the same old, you know. Or the congregational members saying, all they want is our money. I've heard these are sometimes things that I'm forced to hear. But it's not a fact that our leaders are thinking that way. And I've really seen that a caring attitude is something that's it's evolving into something that's a very integral part of our society. But we have to know what is the criteria of caring, because sometimes people could exploit that also. Oh, you're supposed to care for me, Prabhu. And they have a mundane conception of what it means to be cared for. You should pay my rent. Or, you should pay my hospital bills, or maybe. But I'll be happy to say also that in some of our communities, we've actually even been able to evolve where there was actually communities into a community where the community does that, not the temple. The community, because they're communities. Because people sometimes think, oh, the temple should do it. But actually, if there are communities and people understand, have nice relationships with each other based on Krishna consciousness principles, there is a impetus and inspiration to, as a community, to members of the community to come up and to actually create funds and to create opportunities to help community members who are having difficult times. They're part of our community. Let's help them. But it's not the temple that does it, it's the community. And I'm happy to say that I've seen that evolve in many places. I won't start naming places, but I've seen it evolve. And it's all based on having good, healthy relationships, and it's based upon also understanding the spiritual platform for being cared for. It is not necessarily just always catering to the physical needs of the congregation and the devotees living in the temple, but it really means to caring for the spiritual needs. Because if the spiritual needs are taken care of, then many devotees will find that they have the faith and the spiritual strength and the conviction to withstand and tolerate many difficulties, physical hardships, and because they have faith. So caring, oftentimes when I speak about this topic of caring for devotees, the real foundation for caring is caring for their faith in Krishna consciousness. Because the stronger one's faith is, the stronger one's convictions are, that by chanting Hare Krishna, Shraddha Shabdi Vishas, Kahide Shudaya, Krishna Bhakti Kali, Savakama Kritahaya, that faith means firm, confident faith that if I simply take shelter and chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in devotional service, then all my subsidiary duties can be fulfilled. That's Shraddha, that's faith, as defined by Lord Chaitanya and Chaitanya Charitamrita. So if a person has strong faith, then they can be satisfied in any condition of life, even in the face of adversity. And because they have strong faith in Krishna, therefore they don't expect that as soon as there's some small difficulty that immediately everybody has to jump in and cater to my external necessities. If it comes, devotees always gratefully accept it. But to learn how to not expect it is actually a very spiritual concept. And these are things that we can talk about when we talk about devotee relationships, because we can speak about on the basis which is given by Rupa Goswami, where he explains the dati pratigrinati guyamakyati prichchati, where he talks about friendly dealings, loving dealings between devotees, where they're based upon loving exchanges of giving gifts, accepting gifts, revealing one's mind in confidence, inquiring confidentially, offering prasadam, accepting prasadam. Rupa Goswami has explained these are the six bases of loving exchanges between devotees. And sometimes when we hear that verse, we immediately think, well, yes, loving exchanges means I give something and I've been told that I'll get something. So, and the exchange is complete if I get something, and then I'll give it on that condition. But that's not loving exchange. Prahlad Maharaj made that very clear in his relationship with the Lord. He says, I'm giving to you, I'm serving you because you're my master and I'm your servant. And I don't expect anything in return because this is my natural relationship with you. And I don't want to engage with you in a relationship with you on a mercantile basis that I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. Prahlad Maharaj very clearly explains that relationship is based on, a loving relationship is based on not expecting anything in return. That's love. If you expect something in return, then it's a mercantile relationship. So it really means growing into a platform of, evolving into a platform of loving exchanges, which mean that you offer something to someone because it's out of love. And when you offer out of love, one of the criteria is what Rupa Goswami gives, Anya Balasita Sunyam Ganakamani Navatam, that the symptom of love is it's intended for the person that you're offering it to for his pleasure, and one doesn't expect anything in return. That's a symptom of love. Of course, he's speaking about that in terms of one's relationship with Krishna, but it can also be understood in terms of one's relationship with devotees of Krishna. So, a real loving relationship means that when we render service to somebody that we have a confidential relationship with, we have affection for, and then we've already experienced something in that relationship which has led us to the conviction that actually this person is really a friend. And because this person is really a friend, I feel some loving affection towards that person, and therefore I want to reciprocate what I've already gotten in the relationship. Somehow my friend has given me something, and the reason why I appreciate it so much is because he gave me something and he didn't expect anything in return. And that's really, when you think about it, that's really a powerful introduction to friendship. It's real friendship. But these are the types of friendships that one is supposed to have in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna consciousness provides a foundation for such friendships because it's centered on Krishna. Without being centered on Krishna, then unfortunately, there's no foundation for such relationships. The key is how to add Krishna. Right? Prabhupada, the simple analogy Prabhupada oftentimes would use is if you have so many zeros, they equal zero, but when you put one in front of all your zeros, every zero becomes significant. Right? So with the one, he says, is you have to add Krishna. So you have may have many friends, but if there's no Krishna, it's not really friendship. It's born of an expectation of something in return. Yeah, he's my friend because I do something for him and I know he'll do something for me. We're motivated, expecting that to be there. But when Krishna is the center, it really changes the whole, it's a major paradigm shift. It changes the whole foundation of a relationship, because when Krishna is the center, a devotee is motivated to please Krishna. Just like I oftentimes, when I think of this, I think of a pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is a pastime of the two Brahmins who were the story of Sakshi Gopal. And the two Brahmins who were going on pilgrimage, and the younger Brahmin was helping the elder Brahmin. And both of them were actually very pure Vaishnavas. And the elder Brahmin, he became so grateful because the younger Brahmin was assisting him in so many different ways in the course of their pilgrimage. He was helping him, and he was caring for him. He was taking care of many of his physical needs. And then the elder Brahmin became so grateful for the service rendered by the younger Brahmin. The elder Brahmin was thinking, I want to give something in return. So what did he offer? He said, I want to offer you my daughter in marriage. And then the younger Brahmin said, oh, you're from a very wealthy aristocratic family. I'm not from such an aristocratic family. Your families won't appreciate that. And he said, but actually, please, you don't have to give me anything. I serve you because by serving you, I'm serving Krishna. Don't deprive me of that. And don't deprive me of that opportunity of serving you, because I'm so inspired to serve you because you're such an elevated, pure Brahmana that when I'm rendering this service to you, I'm doing it because I feel that this is my way of serving Krishna, because you're so fixed on Krishna. Why shouldn't I serve you? But nonetheless, it's natural. The elder Brahmin was thinking, although the younger Brahmin didn't want anything, then he was saying, but still, I feel very much obliged to you, and I'd like to. There's a whole story behind that. If I start telling the whole story of Sakshi Gopal, I'll lose the I may lose. It's a wonderful story of how I can give the summary with the elder Brahmin promised to give his daughter in marriage, and the younger Brahmin said, "Well, look, you know, I don't want to get you in trouble. I think that you're going to have some problems when your family members find out about my heritage. They're not going to feel so good about offering your daughter to me in marriage. So for your sake, why don't you make this statement in front of Gopal, let him be witness in case he has to testify or give his testimony at some later point, then he'll protect you." So they went before the deity of Gopal, and Elder Brahmin said that, "I speak before you, Gopal. I make this vow, solemn vow, that I'll give my daughter in marriage." And then, of course, Gopal heard the vow. But when it came time for the elder Brahmin to go to the younger Brahmin, to go to the elder Brahmin's family, because he wanted to uphold his vow, his promise. And he made it before the deity, so he went to accept his daughter's hand in marriage, but his children were objecting. They were threatening. One of them was threatening, "I'll kill myself if you give my sister to this Brahmin." And he started making up all kinds of stories. And then he started to testify before all the townspeople that actually this younger Brahmin, he gave some intoxication to my father. And while he was intoxicated, my father made this vow. And actually, he didn't really mean it. He did it under stress, under duress, and under the influence of an intoxication. None of the townspeople should accept this. And then the younger Brahmin said, "Well, Gopal heard witness, so he bore witness to this vow, so we should call him." So that's the story of Sakshi Gopal. And then the Brahmin said, "I'll bring Gopal." And then the son of the elder Brahmin said, "Well, if you bring your Gopal here, then I'll accept it." He had no faith. He was a faithless person. "If you bring your Gopal here, then I'll accept." And so the younger Brahmin went before Gopal and said, "Gopal, you bore witness to this vow of this elder Brahmin, and that uphold the words of your devotee, you'll have to testify." And so then Gopal said, "Well, how can I go? I can't go there." And then the younger Brahmin said, "Well, if you can talk, you can walk. So why don't you come?" Then Gopal agreed. I said, "Okay, I will come behind you when you walk to the village. Walk back to the family of the elder Brahmin, but don't turn around. If you turn around at once, then I'll immediately stop walking." So the Brahmin walked, and he said, "You'll know that I'm behind you by the sound of my." not that sound. Fortunately, there were no sounds like that. Wow, it's doing it again. I thought for sure my phone never works in the temple. How is it happening? Oh, it's connected to the internet, that's how. Okay. No, it's the sound of the ankle bells, not the sound of a text message arriving. And then, as he was walking, he could hear Gopal behind him and the sound of the ankle bells, but at one point he didn't hear the ankle bells and he turned around, and then Gopal just stopped there, but it was close enough. And anyways, that's the story of Sakshi Gopal. But the Brahmin, the younger Brahmin, was specifically, his mood was is that he served the elder Brahmin because his mood was that by serving you, I'm serving Krishna. Right. And because the elder Brahmin was so fully dependent on Krishna and was not expecting any assistance from the younger Brahmin, he was, as one who's in Krishna consciousness, he just always is fully dependent on the Lord. And naturally, although he didn't expect, he was very grateful by the service rendered by the younger Brahmin, and he naturally wanted to reciprocate in some way, although the younger Brahmin didn't in no way expected it, or nor did he want it. So if Krishna's there, then loving relationships can actually evolve, if as long as everybody is has the same goal of that we're trying to become Krishna conscious. Anyways, I was going to read a verse and I was going to speak about it, and I'm simply introducing the topic about relationships, and I was explaining why many of the leaders in our society are very concerned that there are caring and loving relationships. Devotees need to feel cared for, and then I was explaining before, but the basis of real devotee care is not just simply in taking care of the physical needs, but is actually caring for one's faith in Krishna. How to help others. And if we want to care for others' faith in Krishna, then one way we can give others faith in Krishna is we have to also not legislate faith. Sometimes leaders, if they're not careful, they may think that because they've been assigned a leadership position, they automatically command the authority and the respect required to lead. But one of the important qualifications for leading is also being a good servant. And if one is not a good servant, and if one is not a good example of being a good servant, and if one is not careful to represent the higher authority in giving the message or instruction to others on how they should serve and what they should do and how they can serve in a way that they can render service to the Supreme Lord, render service to the deities, render service to the devotees, then simply to order that, you know, then sometimes that doesn't necessarily inspire a voluntary service attitude. And in fact, Srila Prabhupada, in one of his letters, I think it was on December 22nd, 1972, I always remember the date, he wrote a very beautiful letter instructing his leaders of the society that emphasizing that his Krishna consciousness movement is meant to inspire voluntary service from its constituents. He says the spirit of voluntary service has to be maintained. And he says it is the duty of the leaders to create an atmosphere to inspire others to come forward and to voluntarily serve. Of course, sometimes people hear that and they can exploit that too. Oh yes, voluntary serve means I'll decide what I'll do to serve and you have to accept it. And if you don't accept it, then I don't. Well, then a person who thinks that way, he really loses out on understanding what is the spirit of cooperation. Because there are many, many factors that come into play in living in a society of devotees. But nonetheless, Prabhupada in this letter had said it's the duty of the leaders to inspire a service, a voluntary service spirit, so that people will come forward and they'll to rise up to the occasion. And it says that this challenge has to be there constantly for devotees to rise up and to voluntarily serve. And he said the only way it can happen, he did give the foundation, the only way it can happen is that when everybody collectively are engaged in the same activity of hearing and chanting Srimad Bhagavatam together. Otherwise, if one doesn't hear, if one doesn't hear the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, if one doesn't acquire faith, acquire a taste, of course it's nice when the taste is there, but I mean, although the taste may not always be there, be very powerful and very, very strong, but at least one understands the urgency and the need to hear the message of Srimad Bhagavatam, That really contributes to a nice cooperative atmosphere where devotees feel inspired to rise to the occasion, and they feel encouraged to contribute in a meaningful way to a cause that they understand will be pleasing to Radha Gopi Vallabha and will be pleasing to the senior Vaishnavas. And they want to make sure that their service is something that's going to the right destination. Nobody likes to put all their energy into something and then finding out that, you know, that in the, at the end, that feeling very disappointed that I've given so much of my energy, so much of my time, so much of my wealth, or whatever it may be, and it didn't really get to where I wanted it to go to. And that can be a cause of discouragement also. But when the collective effort is centered on relationships based upon hearing and chanting about Krishna, then inspiration naturally comes. And Prabhupada made that point very clearly in the letter that he wrote on December 22nd, 1972. He said that we should not be so careful to count up new members. He said, let them come and hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly. Of course, this is something, how to deal with that. This is something that's changed over the years. In the 1970s, I will say, Muktavanya can tell you also, I think probably Panamanda Prabhu can say, who else was here in the 70s? Anybody else? Am I missing? Bhaktivik? That's right. Bhaktivik was in the 70s. In the 70s, the main substance of Sangha was Srimad Bhagavatam class. Because everybody was there. Everybody was there. And most of the devotees were living in the temple, and even congregational devotees would live close to the temple and they would come to Bhagavatam class. And Prabhupada really, I mean, that was the spirit, that was the mood in the 70s, that Sangha meant Nasta Payesha Abhajeshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevita Bhagavad Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. That by regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and serving the devotees, that all of this is troublesome to the heart. And in fact, I oftentimes explain that when Prabhupada first published Srimad Bhagavatam, the early editions of Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada had that verse translated, by regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and serving the devotees of the Lord, all that is troublesome to the heart becomes practically destroyed. But in his edited version that he published a little bit later in the 1970s, it might have been 75, Prabhupada changed the translation that by regular attendance of Srimad Bhagavatam class. I think that's what's still there now, right? I think, by regular attendance. It wasn't there in the older. It was by regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. By regular attendance of Srimad Bhagavatam class. And serving devotees. So, and by regularly attending Srimad Bhagavatam class is a very important spirit that is realized in regularly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam class. And I oftentimes give this example when trying to speak to devotees who are having difficulties in their relationships, having difficulties with cooperating. Because sometimes devotees, their basis of association is only through social interaction. They're doing things together. Is interacting socially, like, you know, and there's something that needs to be done. They come to the temple, and they're told what to do. They do it. They come do it, and sometimes they have difficulties and do it, and they're interacting And then sometimes their conversations, when they're interacting in this way, may not always, it may be about the thing they have to do together, which is, you know, it's devotional service. It is, don't get me wrong. It's devotional service because the thing they have to do together is they have to collectively do something to please Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. And Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas are pleased when it's done in a spirit of cooperation. And in fact, Prabhupada, in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, in the story of the Prachetas, he gives in the purport of that one particular verse of how the Prachetas, they serve together, and the Supreme Lord appeared before the Prachetas to bestow a benediction because of they were united in service. They were united in serving Krishna, and they all had the same goal, to please Krishna. And because they had all the same goal together and they were united, then the Lord was very pleased to come before them personally and to offer them a benediction because of the united service. And Prabhupada explains in the commentary that verse, he says that this is real unity, that real unity between devotees is they are united in Krishna consciousness. They're united in purpose, together to do something collectively to please Krishna. So when that spirit is there, then the Lord is very much inclined to offer a benediction and to give them, help them realize the fruit of their collective efforts. But if that spirit isn't there, and Prabhupada explains in the commentary, there may be disunity, he says, even in a spiritual society of devotees. He said, but there's no disunity in Krishna consciousness. He said, disunity is there that in a society of devotees that if there are certain persons who have some leaning towards material things, and therefore it creates disunity. So the point that I'm making is that real sense of unity comes from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. Everybody has the same cause. They're hearing transcendental message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada says the devotees should come together and they should discuss my books from different angles of vision. They should try to understand the philosophy from different angles of vision. And they should try to understand the siddhanta, the goal of the presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam. And by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together and by chanting Hare Krishna together, then what happens is that we begin to see each other in a different way than we would see them through social interaction. Because through social interaction, sometimes we tend, through social interaction, to begin to categorize people according to their qualities, according to their abilities, according to their idiosyncrasies. we have a tendency, Prabhupada says, familiarity breeds contempt, right? We have a tendency to start, through social interaction, we see people according to their external qualities. And their external qualities may not necessarily reflect their internal qualities, which is a sincere desire to become Krishna conscious. And if we judge people according to the external idiosyncrasies or according to their external qualifications, like sometimes people are judged, oh, he's lazy, or she's lazy, or he's... As soon as they think of that person, and really in their mind, they've already got them pigeonholed, you know. When I think of him, I think of this. Right? And everybody's got a label, you know, in our minds. Through social interaction, that's what happens if we're not careful. We begin to develop attitude. Well, every time I speak to that person, there's that resistance, so I don't know if I really want to, you know, I keep my distance from him. He wasn't nice to me. Everybody gets categorized if we're not careful. It's human nature. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, that it's a fault. I'm not pointing out as a fault. It's human nature. Familiarity breeds contempt. And I'm sure many husbands and wives, they've got their list. They've got their list of things, right? That you know, like they see that this, that, you know, and they're trying to deal with it. Many friends, they got their list of things, you know. It's just something that comes out through social interaction. But how to transcend that? The way to transcend that is when you break the paradigm, break the categorization, when you have people coming together with one goal. Let's hear about Krishna. Let's stop talking about him, her, that problem, this problem, why they're not good, why they're not bad, why, you know. Let's stop, because there's a tendency when people get together is to talk about others. And break the paradigm and put the focus collectively, regularly, Nastapayeshu, Abhajeshu, Nitya, Bhagavata, Seviya, come together and hear Srimad Bhagavatam class. And, of course, it's the duty of the speaker, when he sits on the asana, is not to use it as a soapbox. You know, to get his point, like, oh, this is, you know. No, it's Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? This morning, I mean, we spoke on Srimad Bhagavatam. It was Srimad Bhagavatam class. We spoke on Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is for Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not a soapbox. You know, for the person to get his agenda. I've got a good audience. Let me get my agenda out. Let everybody know where I stand. No. Srimad Bhagavatam means let everybody know where Krishna stands, where Krishna's devotees stand. And if I'm going to present that message, I better stand in line with them. Otherwise, who's going to listen to me? It's not my thing. It's where do the devotees stand? Where do the acharyas stand? And where does Krishna stand? And I should be in line with it, because if I'm not, why should anybody sit here and listen to me? That's the duty of the speaker. The duty of the speaker is to keep Krishna at the focus and speak on the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's the duty of the audience, when the sages of Naimisharanya gather together to hear Suta Goswami, what does Suta Goswami say? He glorified them. Fantastic! Oh, sages, I've been justly questioned by you. Your questions are fantastic. They're glorious. Because they're beneficial for everyone, because you're asking me questions about Krishna. Not only did Suta Goswami, was he qualified to speak because he was speaking about Krishna, but he was glorifying everyone who came. He said, I'm speaking about Krishna because you want to hear about Krishna, and you're asking relevant questions about Krishna. Thank you. You're great. This is an auspicious assembly. Let's do this for as long as possible. Because why? Because that's the only way. Uh-oh. That's the only way to offset the influence of Kali Yuga. Isn't that why they gather together? It's the only way to offset the influence of Kali Yuga. What are we going to do? We need to perform a sacrifice to offset the influence of Kali Yuga. And the way to offset the influence of Kali Yuga is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting Krishna's names. So when devotees come together regularly in that spirit, then it really, things kind of evolve into a natural, organic, cooperative spirit. Because why? Inspiration is there. Inspiration. You can't legislate inspiration. You can say, Prabhu, you have to be inspired. Well, who says I have to be inspired? Naranjana Swami said it the other night. Didn't you hear him? It's everybody's responsibility. Inspiration breeds inspiration. Legislation doesn't breed inspiration. Inspiration breeds inspiration. If you're inspired, you'll inspire others. And if you're inspired, you'll be inspired because there's something to be inspired about. Yes, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm his servant. Very inspirational. And now I have a forum to render that service in the association of like-minded devotees. What? This is a chance of a lifetime. Don't blow it. It's a chance of a lifetime. That's, if we actually can get to that point, things can take off. So everyone can contribute. Everyone contributes to such a spirit. And therefore, as we said, that caring for devotees doesn't just mean externally caring for their external needs, but it means creating within them the faith that's required to serve in the society of devotees. And that means the onus is on everyone who is aspiring to become a devotee to manifest the qualities of a devotee. Again, they can't be legislated. Yasyasti bhaktiya bhagavachin kinchana savai gunaistatra samasate sura. Prabhupada would always quote the verse that all good qualities will automatically become manifest in devotees. All good qualities will become manifest. So if the devotees are doing what really cleanses the heart and brings out the good qualities, which is hearing and chanting about Krishna together. That's the sacrifice. And then if we finally can rise, or if we feel the need to rise to that and to take part in that sacrifice as much as possible, not just to come for social interaction, but to come for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then anyways, all these objectives that Vanamali Pandit asked me to speak about, at least a few of them, they can be covered right there. Relationships, cooperation, and devotee care. There were some other topics that were there also, which we can discuss next Saturday. I think evening I'm supposed to do something similar. Tomorrow morning is Srimad Bhagavatam class. We're going to continue the story of Ajamil, and we're going to hear about the glories of the holy name. And does anybody have any questions? Wow, that went up fast. You're quick.
I don't want to have to wait for anybody else. All right. Okay. So.
That's great.
The leaders of society of ISKCON are very concerned for teaching loving relationships.
Yes.
So for a unified worldwide society.
Yes.
Can you describe the loving relationships within the governing board? I think that core has to be there. If they're going to do that, teach that, then it has to be there between them first.
Well, I can tell you there are many loving relationships between members of the governing board. It may not necessarily just because we're all on the same board together that automatically there's loving relationships. There's differences of opinion, but our meetings aren't for loving relationships. That's when we come together for governing board commissioner meetings, we don't come there with the understanding that we're coming to have loving relationships. I'll tell you that right now. But I will tell you one thing that is there: respect. Because without respect, there can be no relationship. Respect, Lord Chaitanya has instructed us to respect all living beings, or to speak of devotees. Love, respect is not necessarily, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Chaitanya Shikshamrita makes this point very clear, that to respect a living being it's something that we do. We respect them. And he says that we respect them by not causing them pain. A devotee will never purposely and intentionally cause pain to another living being. He respects them. He respects that Krishna is in their heart. And therefore, he'll never think of causing pain. He'll never think of saying something, knowing that by saying this, this person's really going to suffer. And I want to do it. I want to make them suffer. I want to teach them a good lesson. So that's not love. It's respect. It's respect. Love is what we talked about before. Love means that there is affection for the person because the person deserves my love. We cannot imitate the Uttama Adhikari who loves and sees all living beings as equal. We cannot imitate the Uttama Adhikari and to think that everybody's serving Krishna myself. The Majjhima Bhakta, he makes distinctions. The Majjhima Bhakta, he worships the Lord. He makes friends with devotees of the Lord. He preaches to the innocent and he neglects upeksha, right? Those who are atheistic. He doesn't love them. He neglects them. Why does he neglect them? Because he knows that if he tries to give them Krishna consciousness, if he tries to give them Krishna consciousness, because they're very atheistically prone, they're going to blaspheme Krishna and they'll become even more degraded. Out of respect, I'll neglect him. But in my heart, I'll pray to Krishna, please be kind to this person. Be kind to this soul. Help him to become free from his atheistic propensities. Respect is there, but not necessarily love. I realize that, but even I'm saying respect is a sign of love, yes, but it's not the only criteria of love. Love, as we explained before, love means that you render service to somebody without any expectation of return. That's a loving relationship. And when you get together to discuss the types of topics that we have to discuss on a governing body in those meetings, rendering service to them means doesn't mean that, okay, I'm going to serve you. I'm going to let you dominate this meeting. Right? I'm not going to let you dominate this meeting. We're in this together. I respect what you have to say, but I have a different opinion. Yeah. It's included, but it's not the sole criteria of loving relationships, of respect. The loving relationships are outside the meetings. The loving relationships are what we do, what I do with many of my GBC godbrothers outside the meetings. We sit together, we read Srimad Bhagavatam together. We do it I have certain godbrothers who are GBC members that whenever we have the opportunity, we sit down, we read Chaitanya Charitamrita. I did it in Mayapur this year with several of them. They're fellow GBC members. I have to cooperate with them, and we have different opinions when we're sitting in that meeting. But we have different opinions sometimes even when we're sitting and discussing Srimad Bhagavatam. But when we're discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, it's a whole world of difference.
So that is the loving relationship going on.
Outside the meetings, not in the meetings. Well, I know that. Well, you might be groping for it, but there are many devotees who do have, unfortunately, you might not see it here, but there are many devotees who do get the opportunities to see that in other places. You might be just in an isolated place, but there are devotees who are exposed to that in other venues. Yeah, and it's very powerful. It's very powerful. Yeah, it's very powerful. And in fact, many of our festivals are organized simply to create venues so that, I mean, when I go to a festival, sometimes I don't even want to give any lectures because I want to be able to have loving relationships with my God brothers. I want to sit and hear them. But then all the devotees are complaining, well, you're not giving any lectures. Anyways, I get caught up in different kinds of loving exchanges. But they're definitely there. And I can tell you that I have a list of people that I serve who are my GBC God brothers, and I never expect anything from them. Never.
So would you say there's unity there and respect?
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. There are some people, there's a lot of, I oftentimes, sometimes will say that sometimes people will criticize ISKCON. They'll say, ISKCON is this. And as soon as I hear somebody say, ISKCON is this, I say, there's so much variegatedness in ISKCON, you can't paint it with one brush. There's so much variegatedness. There's so much variety on the GBC body.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So much variety. I mean, and it's nice. It's healthy.
Oh, yeah.
It's very healthy. It's very healthy. But respect, I see that. It's there, solid. 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 Difference of opinions, though.
Oh, I'm all about that.
Yeah.
I have my own.
But the real, I think the real appreciation of the spirit of unity doesn't come from sitting and watching a GBC meeting. It comes from taking part in the kirtans together and taking part in the Srimad Bhagavatam classes together. Did I address you?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
I don't know how long I'm supposed to go. What time is it? Yeah, and I also, I have to go, and I have to be here for class tomorrow morning, too. Well, I'll take one more question, because that was a long time with that question. Vic, is it a fast one? Or is it? It's a short question. Sometimes short questions have long answers.
So you were here in the 70s with Prabhupada.
Huh?
You were here in the 70s with Prabhupada, and if Prabhupada left his books and his memories, you feel that the progress is very much the same.
Progress of ISKCON?
Yeah,
oh, that's a short question. I don't know if that's a short answer. Yes and no. How's that for an answer? And I could explain it maybe tomorrow in Bhagavatam class for those of you who would like to come. More in-depth answer. And you had that quick question?
Actually, you were talking about the Rupa Goswami, and he's mentioning the loving relationship between devotees, the Dhamma Pratimanati. So, when we understand this principle, many times, you know, in details, if you go in this modern scenario, sometimes it's very difficult actually. You know, devotee doesn't accept gift, sometimes it happens actually practically. If you don't accept us when it is written. So is that details are very much important, or you have to understand only principle?
Principle has to be understood, and the details important. The details are very important. But sometimes devotees don't accept for the wrong reasons. And sometimes they may not accept because they don't want to be bound. Because if they accept and they think this person is going to expect something from me, so therefore I won't accept. So that may be a reason. Might be one reason. Another reason may be out of artificial humility. All right. But it's important to recognize when something is being offered out of love. Because when something is offered out of love, then I shouldn't say it's the duty to accept it, but it's actually love to accept it. Because it's offered out of love. So we really have to come up in our standard of understanding of what is a loving offering and what is a loving accepting. And if we do come up to that understanding, we won't refuse an offering if it's offered out of love. Krishna doesn't refuse. He makes it very clear. If you offer me a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water of love, then I'll accept it. But it's not the leaf, the flower, the fruit, or water. It's the love. And he makes it very clear why I accept it, because it's love. So Krishna sets the standard. He sets the standard. When something is offered out of love, he accepts it. You know? So in the same way, if there's a loving, someone is offering something out of love, we accept. But again, we have to be careful. We may accept, we may not accept, because we may understand that I want to say this, but I don't want it to some people to artificially try to immediately incorporate it into their dealings. But sometimes they may not accept because they need to instruct. And because they need to instruct, for the purpose of instructing, they may not accept it to help the person understand there's something wrong with the way this is being offered. So that is there also. But we have to be very careful to play that role and not play it artificially to think that we're on in the platform of instructing and teaching. But that's also love, because love means to instruct and to help a person advance in Krishna consciousness. So he may do that for a particular reason. So there's different reasons given for accepting. So the details are important. They're not unimportant. They are important, but we should not imitate. But really, we should try to come to the platform of offering genuine love. That's a detail that's important. And that criteria, one of the criteria, is to not expect something in return when giving the offering. I did this for you, and I'll do it only so many times. But if I don't start getting something that I expect to get, I don't know if I can keep on going. Right? Doesn't that happen a lot sometimes? I don't know if I can keep on going. But then, it wasn't love. Lord Chaitanya is so merciful that he gave love. He created the impetus first. He gave love without expecting, without discrimination. He gave it. And for those who are conscious enough and able to appreciate it and who are astute enough, they can understand what he just gave me, I can never pay back. So why should I ever expect anything ever again? Let me go on this life to my dying days giving without expecting anything. Because what Lord Chaitanya gave me and what his devotee gave me is such a rare and a valuable gift that I can never pay it back. And I was actually giving a talk just a couple of weeks ago that's the kind of experience we should have in Krishna consciousness, that what I got can never be paid back. Right? Because it can never be backed, be paid back. Let me go on serving and to my dying days. I've gotten enough to keep me going this whole life. That kind of relationship has to be there. And when we have that kind of relationship, automatically our other relationships, loving relationships, will fall into the right place. First, there has to be that kind of relationship. Then other relationships will fall into the right place. Loving relationships will fall into the right place. Automatically, naturally. Anyways, I'm going to stop here. And what's this? Oh, offering prasadam and accepting prasadam.
A little flour, a little water.
Yeah.